As authorities again battle to regain control over the immigration detention facility on Christmas Island after more unrest overnight, further criticism has emerged of Australia's refugee swap with Malaysia. A leading international authority on refugee law says the deal blatantly contravenes Australia's legal obligations to asylum seekers under the Refugee Convention. Professor James Hathaway says Australia's current government and the previous one have acted with extraordinary callous disregard for the rights of asylum seekers. The federal government says the deal with Malaysia is yet to be finalised, but maintains it will safeguard the rights of the 800 asylum seekers to be sent to Malaysia and will protect them from caning and other harsh punishments. But James Hathaway, a professor of asylum seeker and refugee law at the University of Michigan, told me that Australia can't guarantee those rights because Malaysia doesn't recognise any rights relating to refugees.
Basically, the rules of the game are that state parties to the Refugee Convention can share responsibility to protect refugees as between them, so long as those arrangements respect all of the refugees' acquired rights. Now, that's where we run into problems here. First of all, you can't share obligations with a state that hasn't got any obligations, and that's the case for Malaysia. It isn't a party to the Refugee Convention, and there's no authorization under the Refugee Treaty to share responsibility with someone who hasn't got any responsibilities. And so we're at a bit of a dead end initially with Malaysia. But secondly, even if one got past that point, once the refugees have come under Australian jurisdiction, and most assuredly, once they've touched Australian territory, they have a series of acquired rights under the Refugee Convention that bind Australia if it wishes to then transfer them to another state. Things like duties of non-discrimination and access to the courts and rights to education and freedom from arbitrary detention. None of those rights is guaranteed under the agreement with Malaysia. So two critical stopping points. One, you can't share with someone who isn't a party. And number two, even if Malaysia were a party, there is no agreement here to actually honor the refugees' acquired rights. So it's an illegal deal, to put it simply.
Australia is still negotiating these arrangements, but it's understood that it will include the protection of human rights, that these asylum seekers will live in the community having been processed through an Australian-funded facility, and that they won't be subject to Malaysian laws. They'll bypass those. What issues do you see there? What have you identified there?
Well, I think we have to be careful about exactly what's being agreed. The draft of May 23rd that was leaked provided that there were no guarantees of rights of any kind, but rather simply, and I'm quoting, that refugees would be treated with dignity and in accordance with Malaysian law. Given Malaysia's horrific record on the treatment of asylum seekers, that's not much of an assurance, I would think.
If these 800 asylum seekers are deemed to be asylum seekers rather than illegal immigrants and they're issued with a so-called UNHCR card, what does that provide them with?
Well, it can mean as little or as much as Malaysia decides it means. I mean, there is no such thing as a UNHCR identity document that imposes binding obligations on even a state party to the convention, much less to a country like Malaysia, which has no obligations of any kind to refugees. And so it really, that's precisely the problem. We have no idea what is actually going to happen to the people once they're in Malaysia. All we know is that the Malaysian track record on the treatment of refugees is one of the worst in the world. The fact that they've refused to be bound by the treaties should tell you something. They understand that the treaties imposing duties of non-discrimination and freedom from arbitrary detention impose obligations that they're not prepared to live up to, otherwise they would likely assign them. And I think that's where the flashing yellow light comes in. That's why international law allows governments to share responsibility for protecting refugees as among states that have all agreed to be bound by the same duties, but why it disallows the dumping of refugees into states that have taken no obligations to protect of any kind. And that's what we're looking at in this scenario.
What legal recourse might this group of 800 asylum seekers have, either against Australia, Malaysia, or indeed the UNHCR?
Well, you've raised the critical question. The UN Refugee Convention is the only major UN human rights treaty that does not have an international supervisory body. This is a problem because it was drafted before all of the other major human rights treaties. There is no body in Geneva to which we can appeal to override either a national decision or indeed UNHCR practice. It's really going to be a question of whether one can somehow shoehorn refugee obligations into a domestic legal action that would somehow enable the individuals about to be forcibly removed to contest their deportation. It's a tough ride in a common law country where international law isn't directly incorporated, and that's part of our dilemma here, that we've got obligations that Australia not only chose to sign on to, but to be frank, helped to draft, which it hasn't domesticated, and therefore judges in Australia are in a very difficult position, knowing that removal may put Australia in breach of international law, and yet Australian national law not having given them the authority to apply those treaties.
Can you see any legal issues presenting themselves for the 270-odd asylum seekers and crew who've arrived on Christmas Island and will instead be sent overseas?
Yeah, this is one of these extraordinary legal fictions, the idea that, you know, there can be any such thing as an offshore excised place. The term that's used for Christmas Island, as a matter of international law, is an impossibility. It's either Australia or it's not. The idea that you can be part of Australia but be a place where Australian law doesn't apply, as a matter of international law, has no validity whatever. And so it's a legal fiction. It's a little bit like being half pregnant. You know, you either are or you aren't. It either is or it isn't Australia. And there have been decisions in Europe where governments have attempted to excise parts of their territory for asylum purposes that have all been struck down by the courts in that region. And
so how can the government speak so confidently that these people will not be processed in Australia, that they will be sent to a third country?
Well, because it takes the view that not having given the courts authority to apply the Refugee Convention directly, there is no arbiter of Australia's international obligations. To be frank, the government is acting in extraordinary bad faith. And when I say the government, I don't mean simply the current government, but its predecessors, both political stripes, have acted with extraordinary, callous disregard for obligations that they helped to craft. They know that Christmas Island is as much a part of Australia as is the CBD in Melbourne. There is zero legal difference as a matter of international law. They know that refugees who have been picked up in Australian territorial seas or who are on Christmas Island already have acquired rights that Australia is bound to respect as a condition of any transfer. And yet they pretend the opposite. The difficulty is there is no gatekeeper. Having denied the courts the right to apply the treaty, the government effectively knows that it can act effectively in disregard of its obligations, and no one has the power to stop them.
That's James Hathaway, Professor of Asylum Seeker and Refugee Law at the University of Michigan.